This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM. Tomorrow night is the Vancouver premiere of Salvador Allende, a documentary by Chilean filmmaker Patricio Guzman. The film traces the life of President Allende of Chile from his childhood in Valparaíso to his death in the military coup of September 11, 1973. Carmen Rodriguez curated the movie for the Doxa Film Festival. Carmen left Chile as a political exile following the coup. She's a journalist, writer, and educator, and she teaches in the Latin American Studies program at Simon Fraser University. And Carmen Rodriguez joins me in the studio this morning. Hello, Carmen.
Hello.
Now, when the organizers of the film festival approached you to curate a film, why did you choose this one?
Well, I knew that Patricio Guzman had finished this film last year, which premiered at Cannes, at the Cannes Festival. And it also came to Toronto, to the Toronto International Film Festival. But for some unknown reason, it never made it to the Vancouver International Film Festival. So I knew that the film existed. I knew that the film was very successful and had already won awards. But we here in Vancouver had not had a chance to see it yet. And luckily enough, Doxa, which is a wonderful documentary film festival, became interested when I proposed this film and was able to get it, even though it was not easy. The French distributor apparently is quite expensive and complicated. But anyway, the film is here, and there will be 2 screenings of the film on Sunday.
Yeah, the 7:30 show is already sold out, I understand. Who was Salvador Allende before he became the president of Chile?
He was a medical doctor. He was a member of the Socialist Party of Chile, which was formed in the early 30s as an alternative to the Communist Party of Chile, which followed more of a Soviet kind of line. And he was a self-declared Marxist. He became a politician early on in his career. He was minister of health in the late 30s for sort of a social democratic government that we had with Pedro Aguirre Cerda. And then after that, he became a senator, a member of parliament. And for 5 times, consecutive times, he tried to become the president of Chile. He was the eternal candidate of the left. And finally, he did succeed in being elected first as the head of the Popular Unity Coalition in the late 60s, which, if people remember, also had Pablo Neruda, for example, who was the representative, the leader of the Communist Party, as one of the pre-candidates, and 4 other people. So anyway, Allende became the number one person in the Popular Unity Coalition and was elected as president in 1970.
What changed that he finally managed to get elected? What were the circumstances?
I think that what changed were the overall conditions in Latin America and in the country. As we know, in 1959, the Cuban Revolution triumphed through a revolution, through an armed revolution. And that really alarmed the United States. So they launched a campaign to try and prevent the spread of revolutionary activity in Latin America. Several revolutionary groups had been formed following the Cuban Revolution all through Latin America, and particularly in the Southern Cone, including Chile. So the U.S. poured millions and millions of dollars and expertise in trying to create an alternative to that possibility. And they supported the Christian Democratic government of Chile, which did install, did pass a limited agrarian reform. I don't know if you remember the Alliance for Progress, for example. It was a program of the U.S. Directed to creating better, quote-unquote, conditions in the countryside, among the poor, and so on. So all of that money went into Chile through the Christian Democratic government to try and improve conditions somewhat without changing things from the roots up. And that, at the beginning, it worked somewhat. That government was in place between 64 and 70. So in the first few years of that government, there was a change. But little by little, people became more disillusioned and more aware that these were sort of band-aids and they were intended to be sort of stops to a more radical thing. And by the time the 70s rolled in and there was the election, people were ready to vote for a real socialist government, which in this case proposed a peaceful road to socialism as opposed to the Cuban Revolution, which had been an armed road to socialism.
What were the 3 years like between his accession to power as president and the coup? What happened in that period of time?
They were very, very exciting and at the same time very contradictory and very chaotic. Everything erupted. Everything from popular culture to educational programs. The government created this publishing house, state-run publishing house, that published thousands and thousands of books at literally no money at all. You could buy classics, you know, at the newsstands, and the literacy campaign allowed for thousands to learn to read for the first time. Theater groups, arts workshops, dance troupes, the new song movement erupted. You know, it had already been developing for some years, but it was an eruption of popular manifestations of all kinds. And then in terms socially and politically, Allende was able to use the same agrarian reform law that had been passed by the previous government in order to deepen the agrarian reform and to extend it. So that meant land for the impoverished peasants. It meant, the copper mines were nationalized. That was the biggest reform that was made. And the copper mines until then had been U.S. owned. So what that meant was that the U.S. imposed an embargo in Chile. And you can imagine when a country is dependent economically on a powerful one like the U.S. for all kinds of things, medicine, spare parts for machinery, everything having to do with technology, and that big power imposes an embargo, it's devastating. So it was a very chaotic time. There were shortages of food, which in many cases were created by the right-wing forces of society. They were hoarding. The distribution of food was in the hands still of the private companies, so they were not distributing. So it was a very exciting and a very difficult time at the same time.
What happened on September 11th when the presidential palace was attacked?
Well, rumors of a coup had been going on for quite a while. The right and the U.S. had been doing everything in their power to create chaos. It is very well documented that the CIA poured in enormous amounts of money to support the foes of the government, particularly the truck owners that paralyzed the country more than once and in the month or so before the coup, also to manipulate the media. So the media was in the hands of the opposition. The you know, some key industries were still in the hands of the opposition, transportation and all of that. So the country had sort of come to a stop in the months previous to the coup. So the day of the coup was not a complete surprise, but given that Chile did not really have a history of military intervention, overt military intervention, it was a shock because nobody ever expected the brutality of the coup. So the National Palace, the presidential palace, was bombed. Allende decided to resist, and he said that he would not leave, that he would not give up the government because he had been elected democratically. At the same time, other places in the country were being bombed. People were raided up. People were imprisoned, tortured, killed in that same day and in the days following and in the months following and then in the 17 years of the dictatorship that ensued.
And he died on that day?
He died on that day.
Now, I know you haven't been able to see the whole film,
right.
But do the clips that you have seen capture the feeling of the period?
Oh, yeah. More than anything, they capture Allende. Patricio Guzmán has made other movies that document what happened in Chile very, very well, perhaps better than anybody else. During the Allende period, he dedicated himself. He had just finished his training as a filmmaker in Spain, and he had just gone back to Chile. So his job was to go around and filming everything. And with that footage, which he was able to take out of Chile, actually his uncle was able to take out of Chile while Patricio Guzmán was imprisoned in the National Stadium, that footage went to Sweden in the first place, and then Patricio Guzmán went there, and with the help of the Swedish and the French and Cuba, he was able to put together a film called The Battle of Chile, which documents that whole period very well. So this movie is a tribute to Allende, to the figure of Salvador Allende, to who he was, the ideals that he represented, his life. So he juxtaposes footage that, of course, he has in his archives with photographs, with interviews. And even though it doesn't intend to be a complete biography, it ends up being a very exhaustive biography of Salvador Allende and of what he meant to Patricio Guzmán. It's a personal testimony of what Salvador Allende meant to him and to a lot of other Chileans.
Now, in an article that you've written about the film, you say that it's a dialogue between the past and the present. What do you mean by that?
That's a characteristic of Patricio Guzmán's films. He has said in interviews that he is obsessed with memory and with the construction of collective memory, that we cannot really look toward the future without being clear about that memory, about that history that we can build together. And that's basically what he has done in his previous films. After the Battle of Chile, he made a film called Chile, The Obstinate Memory. And that's exactly what the theme of that film is. Then he made another one about Pinochet, when Pinochet was imprisoned in London for 17 months. He made a film about that and the impact of that imprisonment on many, many Chileans. Until then, Chile had suffered a kind of amnesia. And in 1998, when Pinochet was imprisoned in London, things erupted again. It was like this lid opened up, and people were able to remember what had actually happened. And in Guzmán, in that movie, interviews a dozen or so women that were tortured, that are the mothers or the wives of disappeared, and for the first time they speak to the camera and to the world of what happened to them. So he has this very clear objective in his films, which is to bring memory back. But back to today, it's not just this nostalgic kind of, oh, this is what happened, isn't it awful, da, da, da. But actually for us to think about that now in the context of today, because these ideals and these dreams of a more just world are not dead. We all have them. And now it's a matter of, times have changed. There are other things to confront now. In the end, you know, they're not that different. So how are we going to move ahead now? But in order to move ahead, we need to remember what other people before us or we ourselves did in the past so that we can figure out, okay, that didn't work. You know, our peaceful road to socialism didn't work. It was shattered 3 years later with all the consequences that we know about. So can we try that again, or maybe we should try something different, or what can we use from these memories to move us into the future?
Well, thank you very much for bringing the film to Vancouver. I'm really looking forward to seeing it tomorrow night.
Yeah, at the Pacific Cinematheque at 9:30.
Right, 7:30 show, sold out. Thank you very much, Carmen.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Carmen Rodriguez. She's the guest curator of the film Salvador Allende. And as she said, it's showing tomorrow night at the Pacific Cinematheque as part of the DOCSA Documentary Film and Video Festival. And to find out about other films showing at the festival, you can check their website, doxafestival.ca, or you can call 646-3200. Now, you also brought in a piece of music.
Yes.
And I'd like to get you to introduce that.
Of course. It's called La Partida, which in Spanish actually has two translations. One is The Departure, and the other one is The Point of Beginning, a Place of Beginning. And it is by Victor Jara. Victor Jara was a leading member of the New Song movement. He was killed at the Chile Stadium in 1973. But unfortunately, a lot of people know about who he was and that he was killed in those awful circumstances, but they don't know his work. And he was an amazing musician. This is an instrumental piece that he wrote no more than a year before the coup. And here it is. It's a beautiful piece.
Thanks, Carmen. Thank you. Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.